Hello, dear heart. Welcome to the Flourishing Practitioners podcast, where we talk all things about space holding, caring for our clients, and succeeding in our businesses. We explore the wisdom from coaches, counselors, and healers. My name's Gabrielle Walker, and I'm so honored that you're here. Let's dive.
Hi, beloved. So this conversation with my friend Wendy Newmans, who's based in Auckland, New Zealand. Wendy and I went to school together, and we met around about intermediate age, so 11 or 12. Which in New Zealand is between primary school and high school. Very honoured to have this discussion and grateful to get to talk with someone who has known me for a long time. It's something I do miss being in Australia, is people knowing me now and maybe not knowing some of my messier sides or some of my angsty sides. There's something just beautiful about connecting with people who have known you from when you were younger. Wendy is my first port of call normally when I go home to New Zealand. And I think of her often because her mum made me a peg holder that I still use. It is slowly falling apart.
Now, I just wanted to mention as well a little shout out, because I probably won't get the opportunity to do so, that Ryan, Wendy's husband, created the intro to the podcast. So when you hear that sound, we'll give him a thanks.
She is intertwined in my life in so many beautiful ways. So I'm so grateful that you can all listen to this conversation. It's brought me to a moment today of just really reflecting on my childhood and those high school years and how in some ways challenging it was, but also grateful I am. And I really love some of the things she brings up in this space for me to ponder on now. I am in a phase, which you'll probably hear in this, but you may not, but to provide a little bit of background, where I feel as if my priorities in life are changing. I've put a lot into my business over the last 10 years. And at this moment, it just feels like a little bit of energy wants to shift up, and I'm still exploring what that looks like. And I can hear it in this conversation. So just mentioning it to put it out there, I'm very open into the universe at the moment for new energies and new understanding of a way to exist in the world. So I look forward to you all connecting with Wendy.
And today we're talking to Wendy Newmans, who is a leadership coach and consultant. And she works alongside leaders to support, coach, and mentor through a bespoke holistic program. Until very recently, she was the chief executive for Able New Zealand, New Zealand captioning and audio description service. She also did her undergraduate at the University of Otago and her high school studies with me at Fielding Agricultural High School. And she's currently the chair of the Basement Theatre in Auckland. She's also an awesome mama. I invited Wendy to talk today because over the years, we were pretty good friends in high school, really. And you've been one of my better friends as I've transitioned to Australia and connected. And I always see you when I go home. And we've had these chats about leadership in different contexts, taken very different paths, but that are weirdly crossing with you stepping into the coaching space. So welcome, Wendy.
No, thank you for having me. I'm excited for this conversation.
My first curiosity would be about how is coaching outside of an organization for you different than coaching within it? Well, how's that felt for you?
That's a great question. It feels a lot easier to do outside of a traditional workplace setting. When you're in an organization, you have a lot of pressures on you as a leader to deliver results for an organization or to work towards some kind of strategic plan or objectives. So any kind of coaching and mentoring you're doing within that, while that can be a really valuable setting for developing new leaders, it also is so tied up with all of those other pressures of being inside a workplace. So I'm finding it really liberating to be able to do this work outside of that. It's actually it feels like a real privilege to get to be invited into someone's workplace. They share with you all of the hard bits or all of the challenging bits, and you get, it's not so much offer wisdom, but just kind of work alongside them to unpack those challenges and help them to maybe see a different perspective. I guess the beauty of it is that you're on the outside, so you don't have all of those pressures on you. And so it actually always seems quite simple to me when I'm on the outside. In fact, the problems and issues are totally understandable, but it seems the answers seem quite simple because you're not facing all those other pressures. So I'm enjoying being kind of on the outside looking in rather than doing it from the inside.
I really relate to that as well. Before I started doing coaching, I was doing like consulting for different organizations and had the same thought. It seemed really simple to me. And then once you actually get in it, you're like, oh, there's a lot going on that you don't always think of at the time. And I was young on top of that. So I just thought I knew all the answers. I want to go back though and ask you, in terms of your journey, what inspired you to step into the coaching space?
Oh, it's interesting because since I've started coaching, I've started connecting with and just following the work of lots of other people in the coaching space. And I think I'm probably a little bit different, quite a practical person. I wouldn't say a black and white person, but I like to follow a set of practical steps to get me to whatever conclusion I need to. And so in the coaching space, sometimes I just think people are making it maybe harder or a bigger thing than it needs to be. And so what I am bringing to the coaching space is actually the supportive ear that I wish that I had had as a leader. When I was chief executive of Able, which I was in that role for nearly a decade, I was the founding chief executive and took the organization through a pretty big journey and expansion over that decade. I think that I had lots of great mentors around me, but I didn't really have someone that partnered alongside me for that whole time, coaching and supporting and being really truly independent, which I think is just something that I can do for people as a coach. And so I've been really enjoying playing that role and bringing quite a practical approach to it and letting go of some of that business speak, just talking around in circles about things instead of just actually going, what's the issue here? What do we need to do to get there? How can I support this leader to be their best and support them with whatever things are a challenge for them personally? Because it is different for each person, you know, what things they find challenging about leadership. Some people find it's more working with their team members or getting the best out of their team members is really challenging. Other people might find that it's working with a board, or maybe it's leading the organization forward or making some tangible change, or maybe it's dealing with criticism or dealing with differing opinions. All of those things can be really hard for leaders. I think the work of a coach is actually figuring out what are the issues and what are the barriers, because it often ends up being different to what people first come to me with.
I'm nodding vigorously because I so agree. I feel like someone's like comes and they're like, this is what I'm working on. And then when you dig it, oh, that we're in a completely different direction. Did you find that you do draw on your experience a lot in terms of how you conceptualize when you're coaching? It's like thinking of your past experiences, or do you find like people were presenting with different things? How do you navigate that?
As my colleagues and people that I work with would tell you, I love to tell like a story and love to connect the challenges people are facing with stories and experiences that I have had. Having done that work as a chief executive and then working alongside people in those roles, it's great for them because I guess I'm someone who has had similar experiences and so have actually been in those situations. So things that I've experienced in my time working in that kind of role. So I think that can be really valuable for people and means probably I'm just bringing something slightly different to a regular leadership coach, which I'm not saying it's something better. It's just a different angle. I go back to that word practical, results-driven kind of approach.
For those listening, so maybe if they're listening and they're stepping into more of a leadership role, might not be a CEO or anything, you're having staff, or what would you say to them to like tap into?
Being a good leader or becoming a good leader is actually just about being a good person. And if you are a good person, then, you know, you have the ingredients to become a good leader in your own unique way. So everybody's going to lead in a different way. You can certainly learn some leadership skills. For instance, you could do training in a particular area that you might need to upskill in. But actually, you can't change who you are. And so embrace who you are. Really know yourself and know what your strengths are, and then really get to know your team members or the people that you're leading and get to know what their strengths are, and then just generally be a good person, be open and honest, be curious about the people that you are leading and be honest with yourself, you know, be kind, be welcoming. I think if you can do all of those things, you've got the ingredients of being a great leader. So it's just tapping into inherently who you are and then understanding the people that you're working with. There's no secret to it. It's just, be a good person. It doesn't need to be this kind of complicated or scary thing. We're all leading in small ways in our lives. And so if you are stepping into more of a leadership space in your work in some way, it's just a further kind of growth and development of it.
I think that's so true. Just be a good person. I feel like we're hungry for good people in the world. That's my personal view. I remember at one point having a discussion with you about women's equality in leadership and the difference between maybe the pathway for women and men. And I wonder if you had any thoughts on that at all?
Yeah, I feel like that's the whole topic in itself. Look, I have a lot of thoughts on that. I first stepped into a senior leadership role when I was quite young. So I was in my late 20s when I first stepped into a chief executive role. Before that, I'd been in middle management, senior management roles. So I'd already had a bit of a taste of what it was like to be a young woman in leadership. And my first leadership roles were in quite a large media organization where working with a lot of male leaders. And that was definitely a steep learning curve. I could just wheel out all of the like old tropes about what it's like being a woman in leadership. You know, if you're too loud or you're too forthright, then you are bossy, you're being a know-it-all. Whereas my male counterparts are being strong and decisive, because I had to lead in a different way to be recognized and to be valued as a leader. So that was challenging. When I first stepped into a chief executive role, I was in my late 20s. It was a bit unusual. People sometimes were surprised. Generally, I was really well supported. The board that supported me into that role was older male. They were super supportive of me, which was really awesome. It's great to have people that are allies and supportive. But I came up against so many challenges where I felt that I was not listened to, that I was not respected because of my age, sometimes because of my gender. And that was really challenging for me. I tried to fight against it, and that was very tiring. I don't know if it was as I got older or maybe just as I got more experienced and started to realize that actually I was doing a good job and that things were going well, that I started to just go, actually, I can't change people's minds. I can't change their perceptions of me. So all I can do is focus on doing a good job and the rest will come. And actually those people that were critical just kind of fell away, or they changed their minds and later became supporters. And so the noise died down and it didn't really matter. I definitely found that challenging, like for my own confidence as well. Like it knocked my confidence. So I had to work really hard on developing that confidence, this phase in my life. So now in my late 30s, I've got two young children. I stepped back from leading an organization, starting to grow my own coaching work, and definitely a phase in my life where I see the stark differences for men building their leadership careers versus women and mothers who are trying to grapple with the challenges of having small children and what that means for a developing career. So yeah, I'm embracing this season of life, but also there's a part of me that just wants to rail against this stereotype, but there's also a part of me that wants to spend as much time as I can with my children and get to enjoy the beauty of their childhood, especially their younger years. I'm doing that and loving it, but I'm also, there's a part of me that just wants to scream out, like, I'm still here, I've still got value, I've still got worth, and I still have something to offer. It's a challenge and I don't have all the answers for it.
Yeah, I so relate to that. I think it's complex because in some ways it can also be nourishing to have that opportunity and that experience as women, but it's also a large part of you doesn't always get to express or know how to balance it within the current structures that our society has set up. I really liked how you articulated that. And I liked how you put it, as you said, quite practically in terms of how it does show up for women, because I know quite a few different women who are navigating a similar type experience at the moment of just how we navigate having different parts of us that want different things. And of course, want to be there for our families, but also want to express all of us too. Do you see a difference between a manager and a leader, or are they the same thing for you?
I think they're really different things, actually. So a manager manages, so they oversee tasks, they oversee pieces of work or projects, and that's great. You know, work and projects need managers, and people need to manage stuff. Some people are really good at managing things, and that's awesome. Leaders inspire and motivate, and they help bring out the best in your teams. And I like to think of it as, I often hear that term and use it myself, like, how do you bring out the best in your people? But actually, I think it's, how do you give your best to your people so that they can do their best? And I think that's what a leader does, is gives their best to their team. A leader is someone that you want to follow, that inspires and motivates you.
I remember reading one thing, can't remember who said it now, but it was like, if you're the leader, that you're constantly giving love notes to your people that are following you, because it's like your love that you're giving so that they can walk and express themselves as well. I quite liked that. It was like, I like bringing humanity into the world rather than technical jargon. Part of what inspired me to ask you to have this podcast, aside from your breadth of experience in the coaching, was our upbringing. Because I often think of it, I guess, moving to Australia and pretty much having left New Zealand when I was 17, 18. I often see and think high school and go, it was a pretty unique education. And it inspired me to think and put things together differently in a way. I was curious about how you perceived our education in terms of leadership or where it's led you and us. I know that's pretty broad, but I'll let you answer it.
I just love that we're actually doing this podcast. And I remember us as children. So Gabrielle and I grew up in Fielding in rural New Zealand. And I think we first met at intermediate. So we were about 11 or 12 or 11, I guess. And we were in the same class, became friends then and stayed friends right through our school. And like we're in the same classes throughout our intermediate and high school years. And we had very similar kind of childhood. Actually, it's funny because I mentioned a couple of times about having a really practical approach. I think it was a very practical education. I think when you're in it, you don't realize that it's quite unusual or unique. And it wasn't until when I first moved up to Auckland to start work and was starting work in like a graduate role in a large media organization. It was, the people seemed quite glamorous to me. One of the first things we did was we went out to a bar as a social occasion for my colleagues, and people were drinking wine and they were like having this very glamorous time. It was, I felt like a real fish out of water. And talking to people about where they had come from was where I started to go, okay, people, these people are not like me, and they have not grown up like me. They have grown up in cities, and that is a very different experience to what mine was. You know, in some ways, I think we were lucky. It was really unique. Yeah, it was just a childhood that, and an education that was very open. And yeah, the school that we, the high school that we went to, had two school farms, and there was like a real agricultural component to the education. The setting was in, yeah, a very small town where there wasn't a lot to do. We made our own fun. I would say it was a fairly free childhood and teenage years. We were all quite practical teenagers who just kind of got on with the business of being teenagers, but did it in this unique rural kind of setting.
Yeah, I so agree. When I think of home, but also high school, there was this aspect of every type of person, but you sort of didn't know everyone was different. You did, but you didn't. That seems quite different to how high schools are here, where the difference is emphasized. Even when I think of how they prepared us for like exams and stuff, because I did my uni here in Australia, it was just surprising to me that people hadn't been drummed with these ways of like, this is how you do an exam, like over and over and over, you know, these sort of skill sets that at the time I did not appreciate. But later, when I was doing my uni studies, I was like, oh, these are actually quite practical and useful skills that, and always getting pushed into something or other. Because I couldn't remember if I'd met you at intermediate or at Guides or Brownies.
Maybe. I mean, it's a very interconnected kind of community. So I remember seeing you there as well. It's like they might have come first.
And I was trying to remember if I'd learned anything from Guides. And I just remember being really shy. And I think Mum just wanted me out of the house. Is there anything from that sort of time that you feel like you draw on now in your life living in Auckland? I guess it's quite, at least in a New Zealand context, it's quite a different place and space.
You always draw on your past experiences, and it's part of what makes you who you are. Quite a shy kid. It's only later in my life that I've gained a confidence about who who I am and about what I have to offer. So I definitely draw on that experience. But like you say, in our childhood, difference was kind of accepted. Not always. There was certainly regular kind of social situations.
Oh, for sure. I agree with you. Yeah, on that.
Wasn't like a utopia or anything.
No. So there was a lot going on. I was just quite sensitive to it. But sometimes I'm like, was that really going on? Or was I just hypersensitive to things as well?
Looking back, that childhood and upbringing gave me an appreciation for the value that different kinds of people can bring. And so to extrapolate that into a workplace setting, you go, actually, you need a bit of everything to make like a happy equilibrium in a workplace that functions really well. So just acknowledging and valuing everybody for the things that they do bring, because everybody does have the unique value and has something that is great about them, and they might not be able to see it. But I think the work of a leader is to recognize what that is and to harness that and draw it out of people. So in fielding, you got on with adults, got on with people younger than you, people that were different from you, people in bigger cities or in bigger meetings, maybe either weren't coming across or didn't have those opportunities, but in like just that small town vibe, you get to know everybody, you're involved with all sorts of different things. And so it gives you an ability to work with others that's very practical, helps you as you move through life in general.
Yeah, it's cool to reflect. Sometimes it seems like worlds ago to me. So I'll go to that time. Is there any guidance you wished you'd received from high school, your childhood, that you would now think is a good step towards leadership?
Yeah, if I could go back and say something to my younger self, it would be, it's okay to not know where you're heading and that things will work out, life will work out. You don't always need to know exactly what you're heading for. I think I had this real idea that I needed to know what my career would be and that I needed to have some sort of quite specific job or career path in mind. But actually life just has a way of unfolding, and it's okay to jump, take the opportunities that come and follow that path and let it unfold naturally. And that's absolutely okay. Less stress about what my life's path would look like. I feel a lot more comfortable even now not knowing what the next part of my career will look like. Comfortable with that and just knowing that there's opportunities out there that I don't know about yet. All I can do right now is just be open to them and just equip myself as best as possible. When you grow up in a small town, you don't know what you don't know. So you see the jobs that are available. You see what your friends' parents are doing. You see what businesses are operating in your area, or you see what other people around you are doing. And that seems like what the options and opportunities are. I would love for young people to just have their eyes opened to the breadth of experiences and opportunities out there. I just think I had no idea what was even going on outside of fielding when I moved away for university. Even then, you're in an academic kind of bubble, and so you don't know. At that time, I thought that perhaps I would become a teacher because that seemed like what I should do. I was studying English literature because that was my favorite subject at school. Wasn't really a clear plan there, but I thought, I guess I would become a teacher because obviously I had known teachers and seen that role in action. I don't think it was an aspirational role for me. It was just a like, well, that seems like something I could do in an area that I enjoy. And it wasn't until like my flatmate was doing a teaching degree at the time, and she was telling me stories about her teaching placements, and I was thinking, that sounds horrible. I do not want to become a teacher. And that is when I had to rethink, actually, I should not become a teacher. That is not what I want to do. Then I made the call, like, actually, I will find a graduate role and I will start working, and maybe I'll do some more study in the future, or I'll do something different. I'll just find a role. That's when I found my first role up in Auckland, and that was the starting point for my career, but I just had no idea where it would lead. I think you've got to just trust that things are going to work out and equip yourself as best as possible and be open to the opportunities that come your way.
I love that. I mentor young people, so like 16, 17, and I always feel a little bit bad because my path wasn't exactly traditional. I feel similar to what you say, but probably a bit more like the naughty auntie sort of thing. Like, it'll be right. Because I do believe when you're that age, there's a bit of exploration you have to do. Maybe not as much as I did. I felt very much a bit trapped in high school in terms of the roles that were told to us that you could have. So in my brain, I had to be an accountant or a lawyer. That was what I was receiving as a role that I should have, which is ironic because I did end up going into being accounting as my sort of first roles. I was also chuckling when you were talking because I was thinking about that fish and chip job that we had. Sort of funny when you think of where we've ended up. So is there anything else at all that you can think that you would like to share about leadership?
Yeah, I definitely feel like I've come a long way from wrapping fish and chips and fielding. That was a lesson for me in that this is not a job that I want.
I remember the same that when I worked at the supermarket and I was like, nah, no, I'm getting out. I need to get out.
Yeah, I had quite a wide range of unusual part-time jobs as a teenager, and they all shaped me in different ways. Yet some of them I had great leaders, and in some of them not so great. Kind of showed me that like at every level, good leadership makes a difference. It doesn't matter what you're doing. If you have a good leader, you will work hard for them and you will also enjoy your work and you'll find meaning in that work if you are led well. But if you do not have a good leader, or maybe you have like indifferent or passive leadership that doesn't really care about you because you're just a part-time high school student doing your work, that is not motivating and inspiring. You know, your leadership matters. Whatever kind of leadership you are doing, it matters, and that there are people looking to you. So early experiences of leadership for me definitely taught me a thing or two about what matters in leaders. And it comes back to what I said at the beginning about just being a good human is really important.
And if you could imagine the world, if things could change, what would you like leaders to be doing?
The world is changing so rapidly. Even if we just imagined where things were 5 years ago, the world completely changed. It feels like it's been quite rapid in the areas that I work in. The rate of change in technology has been so rapid. So with artificial intelligence kind of coming in and that kind of technology just really taking off, it's bringing into question what's the value people bring. I think it's really important to just recognize the beauty of people and what they bring to life and to relationships, and that the relationships you have with people are so important. And if you are leading in a space, whether it's like in a work sense or in some other kind of way in your life, the people that you are working with, they are whole people. They are not just workers who are coming to work to fulfill a particular role. They're actually whole people with lives, with families, and with all the complexities that make up life. When you come into a work setting, you are actually bringing that whole self to work. And so even though like you're not bringing your kids along with you, or you're not bringing your challenges along with you in a physical sense, you're bringing them along in an emotional and a psychological kind of sense. Actually, as a leader, you have to acknowledge and recognize that about people and know how to work with that and how to respect that, but also do the work and, you know, enable your people to do the work alongside all the kind of other things going on for them. The world is, it's complex and it's messy. Leadership is never going to be this tidy thing that you can wrap up neatly. So being a great leader is about learning to navigate this messy, complex world and learning to work with people who are messy and complex and all have a unique and interesting value.
What would you say to a messy, complex person who's in an organization as a leader?
I would say recognize and own your own value, that if you feel messy and complex, it's because you are, and everybody is. We're living in this world now where everything is like very Instagrammable. You can see this version of people that they are sharing with the world, whether it's on Instagram or LinkedIn or whatever social media platform you're on. You're looking at what people are prepared to put out in the world about themselves. That is not their whole selves. As much as I try not to do it, of course you do it. You take a photo of yourself, or you don't show the messy kitchen behind you. You go, wow, look at this wonderful project I've achieved. But you don't show that actually it was over budget and that it was a bit of a failure in these other areas. You just highlighting the successes. Know your own value and know that the work you're doing is important and that you have a role to play and that all you can do is do your best with what you have. But sometimes what you have are all the resources that you need, and that's great. You're going to do a great job. But sometimes you don't have all those resources, or you don't have that capacity, and that's okay. Just work with what you have and do your best with the time that you have, the capacity that you have. You're not always going to be able to give 100%, Have you heard of the glass balls analogy? I read about it years ago and it's always stayed with me. It's about the different parts of your life are glass balls, right? So some of those balls are glass, some of those balls are plastic. And so some balls you can drop and they will bounce back, and other balls are glass. And if you drop them, they break. Your family is a glass ball. A project at work, well, that might be a plastic ball. That might be something that can bounce back. Your health is a glass ball, right? You need to look after your health. You don't want to drop that. And so you could use that analogy for either just in a work setting. You can go in your work, there are some things that are plastic balls and some things that are glass balls, or you can use it for your whole life and go, some things are so important, I can't drop them. It's like figuring out what those boundaries are, being really clear to yourself on what is important and what are the things that you need to make sure you really cherish and look after. What are those things that are really important to you, and make sure that you don't drop them and you look after them as much as possible, because the other things will bounce back. They might not be perfect, but they will bounce back and they will be okay. Or maybe somebody else can catch them sometimes. There are some things that only you can catch and only you can look after. And so cherish those things and make sure you remember what's important to you in your life.
I love that. It's actually really fitting for me at the moment as well. Just some of my priorities and ways of life are changing. I'm going to ponder on that one. Thank you. And I also just had that thought when you were talking of, as part of the training, lots of people are stepping out of the corporate into running a business. And I think it's exactly the same thing. We can sometimes, when you step into doing something on your own, you can take more responsibility for, well, at least I did, than I did with work stuff. Like at work, I was very aware of those boundaries and going, this is the boundary. But when it's me, my sort of vision, or I'm doing this, it would feel more glass, but it probably wasn't, you know. I think it's a good for people stepping into that space of doing their own project as well. Some things feel really important, but they're not as important as our family and our health.
Yeah, and I think they can feel important in the moment, but when you think about what will feel important in a year's time, or in 20 years' time, 30 years' time, is it that work thing? And that sometimes it might be. Or is it actually that family thing, or that personal thing, that relationship, or your health? Those things are things that will stay with you. It's just getting that perspective can be hard and don't always get the balance right, but I try. I'm a work in progress.
same. Recovering perfectionist. thank you so much, Wendy. I really appreciate that. I enjoyed it a lot and loved hearing your perspective and what you're up to.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed this. And I love that we have, you know, just come full circle. I would love to go back to those, you know, 11-year-old girls in Fielding and
chatting on that. I always remember like pulling my skirt up and sitting on the lawn.
Making sure you get the bull tan. I really appreciate our lifelong friendship. And I look forward to just having more conversations like this. And one day we'll be old ladies just laughing our heads off about everything. So yeah,
we'll be like, remember when we did that podcast? What a podcast, they don't even exist anymore. Tan, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.